All right, that was the Bay City Rollers, but we're going to break in right now. We have on the line Governor Bill Walker with us. He's running for re-election here in the upcoming November 6th election, I believe it is, this year. And Governor Walker, thank you so much for coming up and talking to the people of the Aleutians East Borough.
You bet. Thank you very much.
So, Governor Walker, we want to just kind of start things out very broadly, and I wanted to ask you, what exactly, just this is a chance for you to share your desires, your wishes, what you want to say to the people of the Aleutians East Borough. Why do you think the people here in the rural communities should vote for you this upcoming November?
Well, I think it's not just me. Obviously, it's, we are the unity ticket, the only independent unity ticket in the nation. It's really the team we have. It's Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. It's our cabinet team we have. We have a very broad cross-section of Alaska as our as part of our team. So that's different. Usually you're just sort of lined up, you have all Democrats or Republicans, and we just don't do it that way. We just have people from all walks of life part of our team. So that's been very, very helpful. You know, we've been focused on certainly on rural Alaska. You know, the Eisenbeck Road was something that I worked on a long time with the prior federal administration, and working with the mayor, and also now with this administration, we have actually had some significant advancement on that opportunity to connect Cane Cove to Cold Bay for medevac purposes and health and safety issues, et cetera. So very pleased about that.
Yeah, that's been a long-standing issue, and I appreciate the fact that your administration did continue on, and even the recent administration here for the federal level with President Trump and his strong support. So I know the people here in this community, that means a lot when we see so many people standing up for something that means so much. There's three areas I kind of wanted to tackle with you today, if you don't mind. First, I want to talk, of course, about the economy, which is just the chief area of concern right now for so many people, and then talked about fish and crime. Was there something that you wanted to say, Governor Walker?
I'd like to talk about the PFD as well.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and go straight into that. You know, when you came into the office, was it 2014, I think, that, you know, the huge budget deficit, there was, we were bleeding about $3 billion with a B dollars per year. You came in and said, you know, that you were ready to be a single term governor if need be, because you were going to make the hard decisions. PFD was the first one that had to come up. That first year, you vetoed the PFD. I believe it was the first year you did that. How did you feel about that? And where did that money go to when the PFD got vetoed?
Well, let me just talk about the buildup for that. You know, before we made an adjustment on the PFD, we certainly had to reduce our spending by about $1.4 billion. We had the biggest spending reduction, I think, in the history of the state. We had to close 40 state facilities across the state. We had to lay off 3,000 folks. We had 100 state programs had to be either modified or eliminated. And then it became obvious that if we didn't make an adjustment and allow the dividend program itself to grow, it was in jeopardy. So the money that was not paid out stayed in the fund, that was not spent. And the purpose of it was to grow the fund so we can have more, longevity of dividends out in the future rather than a few high years and we overdraw. It's very similar to what we do on fish. You know, sometimes it's frustrating. We see fish in the streams. We're not allowed to fish. And that's part of the whole sustained yield on fisheries to be able to make sure you have enough escapement that you have generations of fishing. The same thing on the PFD. If we had overdrawn that account as we were headed to do, it would have jeopardized the longevity of the dividend program and the fund.
Yeah, I know that you said it was the hardest decision you had to make. So that money stayed there in the account. Obviously, we're seeing the fruit of that now with what would have been something close to a $3,000 PFD this last year. And then the legislature just chose, or they just passed some legislation this last year to start drawing off the permanent fund in order to pay for operating expenses. That came out of both houses. But the two other candidates are running off of a ticket that part of the idea is that they want to restore the PFD. Now, is that within the power or the purview of the governor any longer with the choices that the House and the Senate made this last year?
Well, that's a well put together question, Austin. And, you know, I made the adjustment one time and left those funds in the account, and then the legislature has done it two times since then. This year, the dividend at $1,600, about 6 years ago, was at $800 per person. So it's grown in the right direction. We want it to continue to grow, but for it to grow responsibly and sustainably so that we have them going into the future. You know, the governor, it's an appropriation, so obviously the checkbook is owned by the legislature, so they have to do the appropriation. So, you know, those that make these bold assertions, what they would do is to be saying that's what they would propose to do, because the legislature has the final say on that as far as if they're going to increase that or not. So that's an easy bumper sticker to say, but in actuality, it doesn't really work. My concern is that, you know, one of the candidates I'm running against, Mike Dunleavy, he quit the legislature and didn't stay for the whole term he was elected to. And he's promised to take away health care from 44,000 Alaskans. I accept the Medicaid expansion. And, of course, his team brought litigation against me, and we prevailed in that to make sure that Alaskans still had the health care that they deserve. So, that concerns me when he makes those kinds of statements that he really can't stand behind. So this is election season, and people seem to say things that feel that people will like them because of that. But if they can't back it up, then it doesn't work. So the economy, Austin, you mentioned is something that I'm very pleased that we have finally turned that around with the tough decisions I made. And you're right, it was the hardest decision I have ever made. I know what it feels like to be without money. We were growing up in Delta Junction and Valdez. We had very, very, very challenging financial times. It wasn't for getting every janitorial job we could possibly get. It's the only thing we were able to pull ourselves back up after the earthquake and some other difficult times. So I know what it means to be for that dollar amount making a big difference. That's why it was so difficult for me to make that adjustment. But again, you know, I need to make decisions today that will impact Alaskans for the next 25, 50 years. And just to see that program threaten to go away was something I couldn't stand by. And politically, it would have been politically popular to do that, but it would have been the most fiscally irresponsible thing ever done. And I just couldn't do that. So the economy is good now. I mean, it's made the turn, and the fiscal plan that was a compromise with the legislature passed, and so we are seeing a whole different Alaska as a result of that.
Let me push a little bit further into that question, that statement, really quick about the economy being good. This last cycle, we did see that we weren't with a $3 billion deficit, but it was something to the tune of around, I think, $700 million or something to that we had to draw from savings. Do you feel that Alaska is out of the woods now, that this is no longer, that we have turned that corner and that future years we're not going to see these issues? Or do you feel like there needs to be a push for more areas of revenue, such as a broad-based tax or something to that extent? Would you continue to propose these ideas, or do you feel like we have come the distance and what we are doing now is enough?
Well, I think we do need to do more, and you're very accurate, Austin. It is, we went from a 3.7 deficit down to a 0.7, and there's still a 0.7, there's still, you know, $700 million deficit. And so there's a couple ways that's going to resolve itself. One is that certainly the price of oil is going to help that and help close that gap. And if we stay at oil about $73 a barrel for a year, it'll close that to $700 million. The problem is we're still dependent upon oil with that. We have, with what we've accomplished on the fiscal plan, is we've gone from 90% dependent upon oil down to about 30%. That's a very significant move in that direction. But, you know, my concern is this. I don't want to just have an Alaska that we just barely get by. You know, we have deferred maintenance in all parts of Alaska that needs, certainly in the Aleutians Borough, that needs to be done, and we're not able to do that. You know, we need to make sure that our education system and really our public safety is a major piece that we need to take care of. You know, we've had We need to have a full staff of state troopers and BPSOs. We're about 52 down on troopers, largely because we don't pay them a competitive wage. And they can go someplace else and make more money, and I don't blame them for doing that. So we need to be competitive in what we do. So, you know, when some candidates say, well, we're just going to continue to, you know, cut another $1 billion out of the budget, I ask them, where is that going to happen? I mean, what in the world are you going to do cutting $1 billion out? So it's a point of requiring political courage to do the right thing, and Lieutenant Governor Malott and I have made some very difficult decisions.
Yeah, going into the idea of crime, hopefully we can get time to talk about these two last points that I wanted to touch on. I know your time is probably filled as it is, but you mentioned crime. Public perception about crime is that it's on the rise right now throughout the state, and there's seems to be some statistical truth to that statement as well, as we're seeing an uptick in crime, particularly in the Anchorage Bull area. I think a lot of people, from when I talk to them, believe that there's a big portion of that is to blame on the criminal justice reform that happened a few years back, and popularly, you know, seen as SB 91, I believe, was the bill that came out that first kind of pushed that. People seem to blame that in large part for this uptick in crime. How did you feel about the criminal justice reform that took place? Do you think there's room for more of that here in Alaska? Or, you know, tough on crime is such a popular thing during election season. What do you feel when it came to that desire to reform the system and save that money, but also need to protect the people and this what seems to be an uptick in crime?
Well, you know, Austin, the uptick in crime is directly related to the uptick in opioid and drug abuse, heroin, fentanyl, et cetera. The university just came out with an analysis showing the absolute parallel of the spike in one and the spike in the other. So that's what we're addressing on the opioid crisis, heroin crisis. As far as we have intercepted over 1.5 million doses of this year coming into Alaska. We have drug dogs much more prevalent than we have in the past. We have a 67-point public safety action plan put together by the Attorney General and Commissioner of Public Safety, which involves legislation, which we have. I called a special session last year to specifically to fix portions of Senate Bill 91. This last session, we put some bills through that helped continue to fix Senate Bill 91. You know, 91 was brought about as sort of a global approach to taking criminals off the street. And the problem we had is we had one of the highest recidivism rates in the nation, which means that, you know, we had the highest number of people coming back in. About 67% of those that were processed out of the prison system served their time. We're coming back into the prison system. We're not breaking that cycle. So what we wanted to do is make sure that those that go out once they're out, that they're not recommitting crimes. That we're taking away some of the tools they had before, giving them new tools, some job skills is certainly what we're doing. You know, it wasn't just a matter of cost. It was a matter of bringing down crime at that time, because it has been rising for quite some time. So it's a combination of a lot of things. To bring down crime, a lot of it has to do with making sure we have enough people, you know, on the street to prevent that, intercepting crimes coming into Alaska, you know, the treatment facilities. There's a lot of people on opioids that didn't want to be on opioids. They didn't, you know, they got injured. Many people got injured on the job. You know, a construction worker is 7 times more likely to be addicted than others, because just the nature of their work, they'll get injured. They'll get, you know, prescription of opioids and for pain, and then they become addicted. So we've changed some laws on that. You can't get a 30-day supply anymore. It can only be 7 days at a time. A number of things we have done. It's a many, many faceted approach. If you could just pass one piece of legislation, suddenly, you know, Alaska's crime-free, that would be phenomenal. But it doesn't work that way, obviously. The whole nation is wrestling with this. We just got hit, one of the last states to get hit with the opioid crisis. The president issued a declaration of disaster on opioids, as did I, February of last year. So it is a crisis, and the drug issue and the crime issue are absolutely arm in arm on this. So,
So you mentioned, increasing the boots on the ground for the crime aspect, but then you did brush on treatment. Now, you know, we've been fighting this war on drugs since the 60s, and I believe it was Richard Nixon who may have declared the war on drugs or around that area. But, you know, we've only seen drug use go up in that time. And you mentioned treatment and people not wanting to be on it. And right now, I know that you just put out a press release that there is federal money coming in for the opioid crisis and for the opioid epidemic. Now, because of the nature of this epidemic, people are starting to talk about treatment and the need for treatment. But, I mean, there's so few beds for people who can come who are currently acutely addicted to opioids. And so, you know, someone needs to actually wean themselves off of opioids oftentimes before they can even seek treatment. And that is such a huge hurdle in itself. And if we're $700 million in deficit, how can the state start to address these means? And do you have an idea of how we can get more treatment facilities for people who are currently addicted today, who can get the help that they need to get off of these?
You know, that is the crux of the challenge, Austin, is more beds. We have about 300 beds now. And one of the things I've been working on, I had a call with Secretary Azar at the White House last week about this. There's a federal program that we just received the grant you mentioned, $10.4 million on one and about 20 on another program. So, but the problem we have is the federal regulation that says they will not fund anything more than a 16-bed facility. So we have facilities that are significantly more than 16 beds, but we need to change that. And when we are in the process of getting that, we've asked for what's called an 1115 waiver, and we've asked for that. And that waiver will allow us to provide funding for facilities that are greater than 16 beds. So that will open up the treatment side significantly in Alaska. 10 states have already received it. We're going to be the 11th state to receive this waiver, and we're very close on that. That's a very important piece of it to break that cycle. And so many of you want to break that cycle. They just need the help to do it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been ravaging all areas, and even especially here in the Aleutians Eastboro, we feel it just severely. So I know that's a thing that is very important to the people out here. Before you go, Governor Walker, I'd like to ask about fishing. You know, we've seen just huge swings in fishing. Last season, two seasons ago in 2017, just one of the biggest pink salmon years ever in the Aleutians Eastboro, also a large return for sockeye. But then you get something like this year, where across the state, you know, you had Southeast Alaska, the poorest pink return in 40 years. You had a low return here. It seemed like everywhere outside of Bristol Bay really suffered. And, you know, you see things like disaster money being awarded for the 2016 pink salmon year, and guys are wondering if that's going to get to them. But even beyond just that financial distribution, how is a state going to be able to address these longstanding questions? I mean, people wonder, should they even get into the fishing? Is there an opportunity, you know, how can they get in when you're going to have a season like this where some places didn't even get to put their nets in the water, or they're getting time taken away from them that was never taken away before? And that leaves a level of uncertainty. And Governor Parnell put in a lot of money for the king salmon research, but that got pulled out. The Department of Fish and Game had 30% plus of their resources cut in the budget during that time. And so we're losing these things that we need when we seem to need them the most. And what's on your radar when it comes to this?
Well, continue the research. And certainly research is a big, big part of that, to find out why are we having, is it the water temperature, is it the blob, what is the cause of these huge swings? You know, we're just now ready to, we applied for and obtained disaster funds for 2016 season, and so we're in the process of getting ready to finalize the distribution of that. But they really need to find out the root cause, and we certainly are doing that within the Department of Fish and Game, but also reaching out to others to assist in that effort as well, fishermen, processors, et cetera, because it's a global issue in Alaska. When you have the kind of lack of returns that we've had this year was just very, very difficult. So we're in the process of trying to figure that out, what has happened. You know, we have you know, we have a number of bills that we have signed allowing for, you know, fishermen to get in for the first, so the first time fishermen, kind of like a first time home buyer, to have a, you know, low interest loan to be able to get into the fishing industry. So it's one that, you know, I, you know, grew up in Valdez. I've certainly spent some time on a seiner and understand that every vessel is a potentially a family business. And so I like that very much, the family connection associated with commercial fishing. So it's and that's another reason why we can't just, you know, when people say, well, we don't need a broad-based tax, we don't need anything else, but we'll survive by just cutting, what kind of a loss are we going to have? And we need to make sure we can find out answers to these questions. And when we stop doing that, I think we move in the wrong direction when we stop that. So it's a major concern, major. You know, fishing is the largest employer in Alaska, and a major part of why we became a state was for the opportunity on fishing, but also the ability to control our own destiny when it comes to fishing as well.
Yeah. So, final words, you know, I have to ask this for my personal interest, Governor. You know, you've been a champion for the natural gas pipeline. People, I think, doubted this project quite a bit, but it at least on the news cycle, it seems to be gathering steam. Do you feel like this is actually going to see the light of day within the opportunity to meet that push for natural gas that they are projecting on the world, on the global level in the 2020s?
Well, I do, and here's what's different and why I say that, Austin, is that, you know, for the first time, Alaska has sort of stepped to the forefront and be the and been sort of the leader of this rather than sitting back hoping somebody else will do it on our behalf. And that just was lack of alignment was just was never going to happen. So now we're on the world stage with this. But you know, the reason I want that to happen is I want Alaska to have the lowest cost energy in Alaska and in the nation, not the highest. I was just in NOATAC over the weekend. They have really high energy costs there. They have to fly everything in because they can't get a barge up the NOATAC River anymore because of the lack of water. So of the LNG project, 20% of the revenue from the state's royalty gas will go to, in the regions of Alaska every year, to help fund energy projects that will bring down the cost of energy in those areas. Maybe it's wind, maybe it's solar, maybe it's geothermal, hydrokinetic, but it will be a revenue source to areas of Alaska which will not be impacted by be able to convert over to natural gas. You know, there's a lot of positive on the Alaska Marine Highway System. You know, the British Columbia Marine Highway System, they convert over to liquefied natural gas on their ferries, significant savings to their marine highway budget. I'd love to see us do that, convert over to LNG. And so coastal communities would have access. Some locations, they move the LNG on barges into communities and sort of swap them out like a propane bottle on a barbecue and be able to get, you know, low-cost energy, clean, burning low-cost energy to as many Alaskans as possible. So that's really the goal. The jobs, it will be phenomenal. I worked on the oil pipeline, you know, probably in the range of 15,000-20,000, you know, project labor agreement, Alaskan hired jobs that, you know, range between $20,000 and $30,000 a month is the kind of wages you get when you work, in a 7-12 schedule like we did. So those are the kind of opportunities I want Alaska to have the benefit of. And so it's really more than just getting the gas monetized and revenue to Alaska. It's really to turn Alaska into a very different state for, you know, we have 200 years supply of natural gas up there. Let's get it to Alaskans, get it to a market and turn our economy into something that we can, you know, we don't have to sit back and every year worry about the pink slips or the teachers or is the budget going to pass, et cetera.
How far away do you think there are from shovels being in the ground on this one? What would it take to get there?
Well, the plan is that there'll be a final investment decision at end of this year with the agreements, and then the final decision from Federal Energy Regulatory Commission next year. Probably, you know, construction. We see some construction, pre-construction in 2019.
Well, I think everyone would be excited to see that. So, well, just congratulations on your effort on pushing that through, and hopefully for the state of Alaska, whoever is governor in the future, that can continue on and we can see that come to fruition. And just before we go, Governor, is there anything that you would like to say to the people of the Aleutians East Borough before you take off?
Well, I'd just like to say thank you for your support in the past, and I look forward to spending more time in your region. Glad we're able to help on the projects that you brought to us and asked for assistance on, specifically the access and between King Cove and Cold Bay. So I look forward to that. I think that we have a great future in the fishing industry, but we just need to make sure that we understand the impacts of as we roll out the climate change action plan here this week. You'll see some things that are going to impact, that we believe will impact, at least get to the root causes of the high fluctuations in the fish returns.
Well, thank you very much, Governor Bill Walker, for coming on the air. Let you get back to your day, but hopefully we can talk to you again soon, and thank you once again for your time.
You bet, Austin. Thank you so much. You take care.
All right, you too. That was Governor Bill Walker. He's running for governor once again coming up here in November. Stay tuned. We've got more coming up on KSDP, and check it out online, apradio.org. That interview will be up there by the end of the day.